Let's say co-developers of the Istanbul Protocol, and you are a psychologist, so you represent the coordination of the mental health part in many ways. Mm. And can you, if you go back in time, and what do you think gave you the idea of developing the Istanbul Protocol?
It was after a while I have lived in Turkey myself. I've been in close touch with the colleagues of the Human Rights Foundation, and when they came up with the project in 1996, in the beginning I couldn't really understand what this should be, but then by seeing the form it was starting to take, I found it very interesting, because I could understand that we need some tools. It's not enough to be there and to treat, but there needs something more to be done. And I was just discovering all these international mechanisms and all these bodies. I didn't really know about that. I'm a psychologist, so that didn't really that wasn't really a part of my training until that time. But starting to be involved in the human rights area, it's something you have to. Some point, at some level, I think you have to understand a little bit. And so I found it really exciting. I already found it very exciting to work with doctors as a psychologist, not only with psychiatrists, but with GPs and other specialists as well. But then to have, in addition, the whole legal dimension with the legal professionals, I found it really powerful. And so I was very happy and proud to be able to join the project.
Beautiful, yeah. I think you made also a very important point. When we work in treatment as medical doctors or as psychologists, psychotherapists, we are frequently not aware how important good documentation and good reports are as part of the evidence and part of the process of justice and protection. And we have to learn how to interact with lawyers, with courts, with asylum authorities, and that is a key issue in the implementation in Europe, maybe at least. Mm.
And also in this time in Turkey, it was the time when I started to develop these alternative medical reports, because the state forensic physicians working for the state, they were not completely independent, because of course they had to please a little bit the state at itself, so they couldn't really freely write down their findings. And then with the Human Rights Foundation and the Medical Association came this strong need to do something alternative with independent experts. And that's how they could also show with the case of Baki Erdogan, who has been killed under torture, that he didn't die because of some physical weakness in general, but because of what has been inflicted. And so I thought it was very important to do something independently and to have the tool to do it as well. And it was also a time I used to live in Turkey, and there were doctors under threat. They wanted to do something, but it was a bit risky. You never knew what will happen. I visited some friends in the east part, some doctor friends in Diyarbakir, and they explained sometimes they had to treat people, and it was so obvious what happened to them, but the police officer with the gun in the hand was just sitting beside and just playing with his gun while he had to do the report. And then, of course, they couldn't really write freely down their findings as well. So that was all this this period of very repressive situation that gave also the idea to the colleagues.
Yeah. Well, that's very important, these doctors involved as either under dual obligations, when they have to decide if they follow international medical ethics as a standard, or if they follow the threat or the interests of the government who employs them properly, or the prison authorities. Mm-hmm. So that's very, a very important step in the protection of these doctors and giving them a tool for proper assessment.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. And what do you think are your greatest, let's say, positive experiences with the Istanbul Protocol? Success stories, maybe?
For me, one of the highlights was this Istanbul meeting with this 75 experts. We arrived there, we had only for the psychiatric working group, we had a paper like this with 800 pages, and we had to cut it down at the minimum, and we discussed, I think, 3 or 4 days non-stop, what would we have like to have inside, what is not necessary, how shall be formulated, and it was a lot of consensus, and we had to find, we were 15 people in the room, only in this group, or maybe 20, and we had to find a general consensus for all of them to be happy with the result, and somebody had to sit down and to write it again. It was very intense, and it was very strong to be together with so many committed people from all over the world. And at the end, we made a big party, and we had this very official, not official, but very serious lawyers dancing on the table. And it was a big happiness for all of them. And we enjoyed very much. I think this was very strong. As well as the Geneva meeting with the High Commissioner of Human Rights, when we handed it over and when we had the support from UN, and we could see, yes, it's going to happen. We have the UN endorsing it, and it's the beginning of something new for this document.
Excellent. I mean, this international collaboration in the implementation of the Istanbul Protocol, it's a little bit like a joint language. We are developing to structure the findings of torture in a very concrete way, through the investigation and documentation process, and this international joint standard. I think that's very good.
Yeah. And also, I have to see it in the context. It was 15 years ago. Didn't have so many articles as now on the topic. There was very different approaches. There was a lot of tension between some approaches, or people defending some approaches, and so it was really a big effort to find a common consent.
And now I think the way we perceive the protocol, it's a very good result because it's very balanced. It's open to analytic models, let's say mental health, it includes practical models. It's very carefully worded that it permits to have a general guideline, but not focusing on one specific model of interpretation. I think this is excellent.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very successful process.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think would be the next steps in the implementation of the protocol, the history of the protocol?
I think what is nice to observe is that as itself it is strong and can be used all over the world. There's in the meantime many people that have been trained to use it, so it kind of has a kind of independence. It's strong in itself, which I think is important. Then, of course, a little bit like I mentioned today at the end, when talking about future perspectives, of course, I would love to see the states more behind it as well. I'm not just use it to find new ways of torture that are invisible, to just use it to know better also on the other side, on the torture side, on the perpetrator side. And to use other ways of getting the same result. So I think I would really like to see it applied as it is.
You mentioned the action plan for the Istanbul Protocol. What do you think could be part of the protocol, the involvement of states and governments? And
I mean, it would be logical that the states are part of UN, having signed for this document, that they make sure that it's also not necessary to use it in their countries. It's just something logical, I would say. But I would also like to see it maybe more explained at universities, more in the academic world, and not only in the very small area of human rights defenders, but going a bit more out and being a bit more endorsed by law faculties, by medical schools and so on.
Yeah, I agree. This will be also from the perspective of our project, the importance that we think about really supporting the aspect of Istanbul Protocol that is mainstreaming. I mean, the core activity we all be is being activists, the people really working in that field, but having it as part of the general medical and legal education and also the continual medical and legal training. I think that all medical associations and psychologist organizations should offer a regular training program for those who are not in university anymore to update them on the existence and use of the Istanbul Protocol and maybe offer continued medical education credits or similar incentives for the implementation. Do you think that is a good approach?
Yeah, I think so. I think it should be known and more accessible for this kind of professions.
Okay, so thank you very much.
Thank you very much too.
It was a great pleasure.